This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
This is Recode Media with Peter Kafka. That is me, and I'm smiling. You can hear I'm smiling because I'm talking to one of my favorite guests. She's back again this year, Jessica Lesson, the CEO and founder of The Information. Do I say my favorite tech and business publication? Am I allowed to say that?
Oh, you can, and we'd be delighted.
Will I get
Thank
in trouble
you, Peter.
For saying that? All right, if I get in trouble, pretend you didn't hear it. Welcome, Jessica.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
You just took a trip to China. With Secretary of Commerce, Gina Raimondo. I want to talk to you about that trip, but I wanted to use that trip as a reason to talk to you about China and the U.S. and tech, because it's something that is in the background and sometimes the foreground of all kinds of conversations about tech. And I feel extraordinarily ignorant about what's going on, even though I've spent time trying to report it out with the help of your employee, Wayne Ma, who did a great episode of Land of the Giants about Apple and China and their codependence a couple of years ago. We brought in Wayne to do that. And I wanted you to just sort of tell us where things stand, because it seems on the one hand like there's increased tension and ratcheting up pressure between the U.S. and China. On the other hand, every time I look around, I see more evidence that U.S. commerce in general and tech in particular are deeply embedded in China and really sort of inextricable. And I find those two ideas hard to hold in my head at the same time. And I thought you could help tease things out for me. Fair? You got 10 minutes. Go.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. I mean, you described the geopolitical sort of situation of our era or of this epoch quite well, Peter. But yes, I just got back from Beijing and Shanghai. And one of the reasons I wanted to go, not only to see the Commerce Secretary, but as you said, it is a consequential and complicated moment for the U.S. and China in technology.
That status that like, oh, things are complicated and there's tension and there's a push-pull, that's gone on for a long time, but something seems to have changed in the last few years, right?
Absolutely. And I'd kind of sum it up as this. You know, when I started as a tech reporter maybe 20 years ago now, the market was, you know, U.S. internet companies very much wanted to be in China. And it was hard, and the Chinese government did not make it easy, but there was a sense that it was possible to do business. And I actually covered Google's foray into China, as well as when they pulled out of China, which really, I think, was the beginning of this sense that, the internet isn't as global as we thought, and China's ecosystem was not only going to be sort of hard or hostile in terms of complying with the government's rules, but it just wasn't kind of in the cards. And so I'd say since then, we've seen this sort of talk of decoupling, if you will. It's a horrible word. I prefer separate. But this idea of, for as far as tech companies are concerned, you know, China not being, you know, this important market or big market or opportunity for them, and really a retreat and a focus elsewhere. Now, as you pointed out, though, there have been huge exceptions, notably the hardware industry, where if you look at companies like Apple and many other companies that rely on Chinese supply chains and suppliers, they've kind of known that they need to decouple a little bit to kind of mitigate some of the risk.
Because literally you can't have an iPhone today without China.
Oh, not only that, but, you know, Wayne reported for us just a few days ago that Apple is turning to a Chinese supplier for the glasses for the new VR device, because it's really the only technology that they think
Elon
can do
Musk
it.
Makes so, his Teslas there. I mean, most major American tech companies, many of them rely on them deeply for infrastructure, supply chain, for something.
Absolutely. And I think that's actually setting up a very interesting tension, again, not to overuse that word, with the U.S. government and its kind of policies. You know, the Biden administration has really decided that it needs to ratchet up the pressure on China.
And they're following the lead of the Trump administration, which did the same thing. They are more closely aligned than you might think, given the election and the differences in the two candidates.
Absolutely. And obviously, the tensions have been inflamed by the spy balloon that, China appears to have sent. Also, statements made around Taiwan and the idea that China could invade Taiwan. So the geopolitical tensions have certainly ratcheted up significantly. And what the Biden administration has done is say, okay, we don't want to decouple entirely, but we're going to de-risk. And that means we're going to try and invest more in the U.S. in things that we are currently dependent upon China for. And also, China, we're going to block you from getting our most advanced technology. And so that was really the set of moves that have kind of laid the current landscape for what the tensions are over and actually why the secretary traveled over there. And it's, representing, I think, a really important chapter kind of to this relationship where you've had a lot of the internet companies pull away. You've had the hardware companies very codependent. And you have the U.S. with these export controls on really the semiconductors that are needed for AI. So we're now in the AI phase, pulling them back.
Let me break that in a couple buckets. So the de-risking generally is, something that Apple and other companies would be looking into on their own, right? Hey, what if we did try to get India and Vietnam and other places to help us assemble iPhones, et cetera. It's going to take a long time to build that up. Questionable whether they'll ever be able to do what we want, but we got to start looking into that. It's going to take a long time. Is the U.S. policy of de-risking just saying, yeah, you should go do that? Or is it more sophisticated than that?
It's a little more sophisticated. So it's definitely encouraging that. Commerce Secretary Raimondo passed the CHIPS Act about a year ago, which is basically subsidizing U.S. investment
in building chip manufacturing, et cetera, in the U.S.
In the U.S., exactly. But, it doesn't just stop there, because we also saw the Biden administration follow that up by restricting what U.S. venture capitalists and PE firms can invest in China, in which sectors. And so, there really is this kind of promote at home, but we're seeing a new set of things to restrict the kind of outflows, both in terms of like export control, saying, NVIDIA, you can't sell your super fast chips to China. You have to make them half as fast and then you can sell them to China. Mm-hmm. But also the venture capital piece. So, yeah, there's a lot happening.
And so that is a change. And again, that was, you saw that sort of attitude coming from the Trump administration, and they banned Huawei, the use of Huawei material from telecom stuff in the U.S. What is happening in terms of Chinese politics that is ramping up? Is it just purely in response to America, or what's leveling tension? What is leveling the tension up in the last few years?
Yeah. Well, obviously the situation in China has been very complicated, and we can't forget COVID. COVID also showed how vulnerable U.S. and companies are globally to Chinese supply chains and all of that. So I think that also really brought the strong kind of protectionist impulse and for good reason. President Xi has been really consolidating power in China. And at the same time, obviously the economy is at its worst point in a number of years or more. So, the country is struggling on a lot of fronts. Internally, there's been a big clampdown on some of its largest internet companies, which I think is sometimes funny or important that we remember. We talk all the time in the US about how TikTok has come out of ByteDance, a Chinese company. But the Chinese government has also been cracking down on ByteDance and trying to, as part of a broader business crackdown, across the landscape there. So the country faces an extraordinary number of challenges. And it was interesting to hear officials there kind of not admit that, of course, but talk about how much they did need the U.S. and the U.S. needed China for this global recovery that needs to happen. So the backdrop was certainly the broader economy. But China's pushed back on the export controls. I mean, they've retaliated. This is what happened in trade wars. So they've said, okay, you know, we control some of the raw materials needed to make semiconductors to begin with. We're going to limit the export of those. We're going to block some of these deals that companies like, you know, Intel or Micron want to do. And so
they want to partner with Chinese companies.
Yeah, there have also been some M&A activities, mm-hmm. but yes. So, I mean, they're looking for ways to retaliate. And then at the same time, they're just pouring money into their own development of semis to try and build up their capacity as well.
The restrictions on AI chips, how much of that is this is a national security concern? We're in an AI arms race. We can't arm our opponents versus this is just a either powerful or powerfully symbolic thing that we can deprive China from, because the truth is we can't tell Apple to leave China because we're not going to sink an American company. Whereas it's, you know, Nvidia can make all the chips it wants. It's never going to run out of customers in the near future, and they can not sell to China and be just fine.
It's a great question, Peter, and it depends who you ask. I mean, Secretary Raimondo was adamant that this strategy is not about helping U.S. companies. It's about national security. And she says, if we know that potential military adversary is using a technology in a way that could hurt us, we got to stop it. And she points out that China's whole economy and political system is based on melding those two worlds. And so, you have to assume that your deals with the commercial sector are flowing into the military. Now, at the same time, the Chinese government openly accuses the U.S. of extending the concept of security and just lumping everything into that. So, you know, I push the secretary on this because technology is always changing. And the idea that you can draw that line on the speeds of the chips, you know, NVIDIA can't sell its H100 to China, so it's got the H800, which it's going to sell instead. And the idea that you can calculate that move will, you know, stunt the advance of the Chinese military by a sufficient percentage that now we're no longer concerned about
national
security.
Seems pretty arbitrary.
It's pretty arbitrary. So that's the gray area, and that's why this is a deeply political issue.
We'll be right back after a word from a sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline, because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I want to get an overall take from you, but I did want to mention TikTok. You brought it up a few times. Under Trump, there was what clearly was not a serious attempt to ban TikTok and a semi-serious attempt to make them maybe sell the company. And depending on what day you asked Donald Trump, the plan moved around. It's wild to remember that there was a plan between Microsoft and Walmart and I think totally. Oracle at one point, and they were all going to collaborate. And, you know, Semaphore just had a piece last week saying, no, people in Washington still want to ban TikTok and they're still talking about it. It doesn't seem remotely practical from my perspective. One, it's just an enormously popular app. We had the Democratic, the DNC CTO come on last year and say the Democrats are going to use TikTok, knowing full well what the issues are. I know you're not a Washington prognosticator, but do you have any sense that there's any real danger to TikTok in being really restrained in the U.S.? The bans we've seen are, you know, if you're in the military, you can't have it on your phone. I think some individual states are trying to challenge it. But do you see any reasonable chance of a federal TikTok ban / forced divestiture?
You know, it, at this moment, it doesn't feel like things are going in that direction. But I got to say, this story will never surprise me in that it always surprises me. And I think, you know, President Trump's attempt to do this was blocked by the courts. So I think there's a lot of sense that if Biden or anyone else tried to do the same, they'd have the same fate.
They might have a competent lawyer draft the proposal.
Yes. I don't think the exact details would play out, but it's also true that, you know, statements about banning TikTok are political, you know, catnip, you know, or they're designed to signal being tough on China or whatever it is, and we're going to be entering a presidential election. So I don't think we're going to see this issue go away. I also think it's an important issue, right, for the government to look at the handling of data by TikTok and others about U.S. citizens. But
one is the handling of data, and is that data safe, and what can they do with it? The other is you have the sort of argument you just made. This is, you know, it's a Chinese company, it means it's basically a state, at least partially run company. And do you want to have a state run, a Chinese run social network with enormous clout in the U.S.?
Totally. I've often wondered, Peter, you're probably more an expert in foreign media ownership laws than I am, but I know we have them, right? Mm-hmm. And I've just
wondered. We change them depending on whatever Rupert Murdoch wants.
Yeah, yes. I was going to say that those also kind of move around. But yeah, so I don't think our days of, you know, dramatic seeming headlines out of Washington committees on TikTok are over. But I also think the attitude of the company is let's just keep building and growing, and that kind of defends
solves
us from
it.
Whatever will come next.
I want to talk about Raimondo in a second, but just to settle things, I mean, I think in your piece, you said this is the fourth visit from a Biden official in 3 months. So the Biden administration, while they're talking tough and instituting these bans, are also going to China saying, hey, we want to do business with you. In the lead of your story, you mentioned the various places Raimondo was going on the day you talked to her. She went to a NYU students thing in Shanghai. She went to Disneyland. She did a press conference in Boeing. We're deeply enmeshed there. Things will continue. The tensions will continue to ratchet up. But should we expect anything meaningful to change, at least in the remaining years of the Biden administration? Or is this sort of uneasy status quo where we're at?
I think this is where we're at. I mean, there's a lot of speculation about Biden meeting Xi, you know, in the coming month or so. And in many ways, these visits were seen to kind of open that door. And it does seem that visits like Raimondo's and Yellen and Blinken's have restored dialogue. And you know, I'm not a political reporter. To me, dialogue, it maybe isn't worth as much as others think, but it is obviously important. And I think the fact that dialogue is seen as a win shows how much the relationship had deteriorated. So, you know, everyone is cautious, nervous, anxious, and so on. But I think the sense that, you know, take these export controls, these semiconductor bans, there is now a group, you can't call it a working group because that implies these can be negotiated over, but there's an information sharing group to sort of answer the Chinese government's questions about how they're going to be applied. And so that is a change in the relationship. And yeah, but the big picture, you know, especially when it comes to technology, which really is at the heart of shaping a lot of these fears, I know so many venture capitalists who think the world will be dominated either by a US AI or a China AI. And whoever builds that AI is going to control hearts, minds, wallets, voter registration, you know, everything of the world. And so that the potential for that, for sort of how the next phase of technology is harnessed, is really the backdrop here.
We're going to have you back on to talk about this. But before I let you go, I haven't mentioned Gina Raimondo's name on this podcast before. I'm imagining a lot of our tech and media business savvy people who listen to this podcast have not spent time thinking about her. You got 15 minutes in the back of a U.S. van or maybe Chinese van with her. What did you learn about her? And what should our audience know about someone who's fairly obscure by Washington standards, but is also considered like a rising star?
Yeah, you know, I think she may be tech's favorite politician in this moment, Peter. And I don't know if that's a good badge or a bad badge, but, you know, former governor of Rhode Island before that had a brief stint as a venture capitalist investing in medical devices and known as a kind of accessible direct, effective leader. Within the Biden administration, she's more pro-business than some of the others. But when I, you know, like Andy Jassy, the CEO of Amazon, is a fan. Dan Schulman, the CEO of PayPal, is a fan. It is very easy to find
fans of
her.
What are they fans of? Are they fans of something she's doing in China? Are they fans of something she's doing in the U.S.? Do they know her pre her Washington job?
Yeah, both of those knew her pre. I believe Jassy went back to Harvard undergrad with her. But I think they find her accessible, which not necessarily influenceable or swayable, but wants to hear from them, wants to talk to them. You know, she was really pushing on the ground in China the fact that the China business environment has become, you know, simply uninvestable, she says, for U.S. companies, and they feel that way. So I think they feel heard. They feel like she has good ideas, and in Rhode Island in particular, has a real track record of getting things done. So she is certainly popular. I also found her to be very direct. I like a, you know, an interview subject who knows you're short on time and gets to the point, and she was one of those. And you know, while trying to simplify this very complicated relationship, she also, you know, when I pushed about where do you draw the line, she got into the weeds and talked about it and didn't pretend it was black and white. So all in all, I think she's not someone whose name you hear a lot, at least in Silicon Valley these days, but I think we're going to hear it more. And as she told me, the president asked her to play a leading role in how the administration regulates AI. She has a role in looking at TikTok as well, and of course the hardware side. So I think we're going to hear a lot more from her.
So, you know, the thing journalists like talking about the most is themselves and journalism. So I do have some navel-gazing.
Oh, please.
One navel-gazing question for you. How'd you go on this trip? This is, you tend to not take week-long reporting trips to hang out with the Secretary of Commerce. How'd you end up doing it, and who else was there with you?
It's a great point, Peter, and it's really fun, and I'd love to do more. So all you other secretaries out there, call me up. But no, we got the opportunity, you know, that her team reached out about whether we'd like to.
Do they fly you on her plane? Are you flying when the U.S.
fly ourselves, yep. And you can't, you know, the relationship's gotten so bad, there are no direct flights from SFO, Peter. So this was a multi-hop segment, which didn't used to be that way. But, you know, I was with about four or five other reporters who sort of cover the Commerce Department as their jobs. And I think, you know, another kind of inside baseball note is it's my understanding the Commerce Department doesn't have like a traveling press pool in the way that Treasury or State does. And I think it's telling that they kind of arranged and wanted to get some reporters on this trip. But, you know, that certainly says to me they worked hard to make sure to tell the story of the secretary on the ground there, which is interesting, both in terms of, you know, the importance of the subject and how they see it, and also her. So,
yeah, I mean, to get super meta about it, do you think their interest in having that story told is, we want people to know who Gina Raimondo is. We want the U.S. We want the U.S. tech business leadership to understand that we're trying to do stuff here. Is this actually aimed at China? This is so important. We're bringing Jessica Lessen along. When they're thinking about bringing press on a trip like this, because it could easily happen without press, right? But maybe, or you tell me, I mean, maybe the whole point of it is to have press there and documenting her doing things in China.
Well, Peter, I got to admit, my reporter brain that was constantly using all my transcription apps was thinking, you know, like, how many bodies do you need on the ground? Now, I'm still a huge fan of being on the ground, and you see and learn so much, but there are certainly parts of this that can quickly get blasted and do.
Could have been a Zoom.
Could have been a Zoom, but no, I think it's about which audiences are you reaching, you know, and we've got an influential global business audience. We've got a bureau in Hong Kong that's been writing about this for a while. And I think it's an audience, I know from talking to our readers, who were really concerned in this moment about what's happening and trying to make a lot of decisions about their own businesses and unpacking things like the executive order around venture, as well as just what are the prospects for business. So, yeah, I think there is a concerted effort to reach our readers.
Okay. Well, the trickle-down effect means that you get to explain it to my listeners, and everyone wins. Thank you, Jessica Lessen, from The Information. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks to our sponsors for bringing the show to you for free. That's $0, still the same. Thanks to Travis and Jelani for editing the show, producing the show, and thanks to you guys for listening. We'll see you next week.